Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we're honoured to have back on the pod a true legend of the rap game, an icon who maces mics and laces the bass with figures, who's been cleverly beginning in with cinnamons and went in with the homonyms. Yes, it's the guy who chills with his chest out, chinchilla, or relaxed on the sidelines, and you know you've salivated over his calibrated raps that validated his ghetto credibility. Man, you know who it is. It's the man with stars in his iris and with more bars than the Irish. It is the incomparable.
Ooh, look at this intro.
Bro, it's all you. It's all you, man. Welcome.
Taking it all in. I'm taking it all in.
Incomparable, man. Incomparable. Pharaoh, man. How are you, mate? How are you doing, man?
Peace, man. I'm good, man. I feel great. New record's about to come out, and I'm happy about sharing it with the fans and the heads. Just that whole level, man. Just ready to put it out finally. I've been working on it so long with little tweakings here and perfection things there, but it's finally ready.
Man. You know what? Let's dive in, because, well, actually, hold on. I don't know. You've been on. This is your hat trick. You're on for the third time, man. So I need to ask you the usual question, which is, Pharaoh, least hip hop thing you've done last 24 hours. Do you have anything that's the least hip hop thing?
Well, I got up this morning and I went to this place called Juice Pressery or some shit like that. And I got like a 2-day juice revitalizing cleanse. But shit like that, you know, I don't know if it's not even hip hop anymore, because one of my favorite groups, Styles P, has a juice bar. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
I don't, you know, I think health is very, very hip hop right now. So, you know, but yeah, but it was in Williamsburg and it was in like that part of hipster part of town. And so I never feel very hip hop when I'm on that side. And I got my cup of tea.
Oh, I love it.
This is not hip hop, but it's tea.
But it's an English podcast, and tea. It's
very English. Very English.
That's what we need.
Hold me down. Hold me down. I gotta love it.
Isn't it good to see you, man? It's a good shot in the arm to know there's some new Pharaoh Monch music coming. So without further ado, man, 13, break it down. What is 13? Let us know.
Yeah, the album is called A Magnificent Day for Exorcism. I called it that, and we agreed to that title because, like, you know, it's a lot of things in society that needs to be exercised. And instead of the same kind of like social political viewpoint, you know, it's about going to the core of it and the history of this whole thing and trying to get at that and exercise it. It's not about some lone white girl whose head spins or whatever in that sense. It's kind of even like almost global. Let's discuss the atrocities and the perils that are holding us back from evolving as a society. At the core of it, it kind of does go back to some mystical, magical shit of why, you know, I feel like we're stuck and we're kind of devolving. So, you know, the album is not that far from what I usually do in terms of I've always had rock flavor in my music. You know, that's kind of my roots as well. Just anything hard and aggressive. But this time, I didn't want to make it seem like a Pharaoh Monch album per se. So I wanted to incorporate musicians that are not like some background shit, allow them to play a part in the building of this record like a band would do. So after like kind of conceptualizing some of the things, I realized I couldn't take it to that next level without Marcus Machado on guitar and Daru Jones on drums. In terms of like, it needed to be this flair there and aggressive there. And they're assassins. Like, I didn't want people to think in terms of like groups in the past who've tried to do this type of kind of like mashup. So I wanted to pay attention to especially the hip hop temperament, make sure it doesn't lose and it gets loose. So it stays grimy and kind of like hardcore with all the elements of hip hop that I like. So Lee Stone is one of the executive producers from Internal Affairs, Simon Says and that fame, along with Super Ugly Marco Polo Knots and a couple of other people I'm employed or brought in to say to make sure things keep that certain feel along with the live shit. Some of the shit is just straight live, which is some of the craziest shit, and some of the shit incorporates the minds of of those kind of producers, kind of like a band would bring in a producer to produce a record back in the day, as well as myself on a couple of joints as well. So that's what I'm most proud about. I think it takes you there without losing the hip hop sensibility. Yeah.
Man, absolutely. I've heard just a few tracks off of it, and I can completely see that, man. You're talking there about Knots, you're talking about like Polo and other people who've come on board to help. Was it hard to kind of like figure who to approach because of the metal and the rock element, which is kind of instrumental in your work, I would say? You've used it numerous times throughout. Anyone who's a Pharoah fan will know you've used it. Even on 1991's record, even on there, there's some rock on there. Right. Was it hard, like, to find who would work well in that sound with you, like Knots and people like that?
Well, let me jump forward and say I think I've remedied the time it takes me to make a record. But once again, it took a while, because from the concept to like finding the right stuff, like, you know, you listen to the Knots catalog and it's like, I could fucking damn near rhyme over everything he does. He's like that good. But it took me some time to like, just from what I was hearing, to kind of like pick things out that would work with the project in terms of, and then send him what we did and then get back and then play shit over and, you know, that kind of thing, and work it out till it was incredible. Same thing with E. Jones. Shout out to E. Jones on the Fight record. The band flew into North Carolina to sit with them and just like, you know, vibe and tell them what we were looking for. The whole crew out there. And so I thought a couple of things fit with the construct of the overall project, which is, it may not be something that people get anymore with albums, but I wanted to stay in that tradition. And that takes a little bit of time because like you're pulling from different sources. I think moving forward, not to get ahead of myself, I think I kind of got it figured out. So, you know, you'll be getting a new 13 record in less than been 6 years.
That's good to know.
But staying here on Magnificent Day, yeah, it's just some real brilliant moments. It's some straightforward like head bopping, you know, fucking forehead bashing moments, and then it's a lot of bars. And it's very bar heavy and melody heavy, so I think it's a good blend. You know, these is like kind of like the most bar heavy record since Internal Affairs, in terms of like just spit. I always pay attention to melody and chorus, but some of these records like just go beyond the 64 bar type shit.
Oh man, right, man, that's it. I'm hype. I like the idea of where you've gone with it. I think, like you said, with melody, one thing that really struck me, and I've talked to you over 2020 and how crazy it was and stuff like that, and well, 2021 is just as crazy, to be fair. I'm stuck with the first week of January. The title, A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism, what is the thinking behind that title as a group?
Once again, you know, I was looking at it like just in the moment, feeling like spiritually, and this is years ago, this is not even dealing with what the country is dealing with now. You know, I probably conceptualized this 10 years ago, started on the project like four or five years ago, like the first songs. And I don't mean obviously consistently. We were touring, I was touring, you know, they're sought after and got their own projects in their own right. They're everywhere. Marcus Machado got a project out right now, and he tours with the best of musicians. Darryl Jones works with Jack White and that whole thing. So just before this whole movement, all the musicians and MCs were out touring and gigging. So I kind of have to do that. You know, I was doing that to budget things and get this project sort of going. So I say that to say, even back then, I could kind of feel the trajectory that the energy was on in terms of vibration, low vibration and high vibration, and where people were at. So I was like, you know what, if we're really going to address the atrocities that will continue to happen and that are happening, and as a reflection of who America and what America is as a country, the truth about what needs to happen is an extraction, a change, an exorcism, kind of like, you know, pull the evil out, deal with the evil, so to speak, if that makes any sense, you know?
Absolutely.
Got to talk about it and you got to deal with it. And another thing that I was feeling in the moment was frustrated, which is why this is the perfect project. It's a lot of aggression. And I just felt like on a feral, mystical ball level, it's like, fuck it, man. Like, I'm kind of tired of asking. So the aggression comes with, you know, these are the angels of good coming to do some dirty work down here in this fuckery that we're dealing with right now.
Man, it's been a pleasure to talk to you since the summer in 2020, because although there was anger, there was also, I felt in our chat especially, there was an element of hope, like something is happening, something is changing, there may be a light at the end of the tunnel for stuff you have been spitting about from day one. Like all of your records have, in fact, it's almost ridiculous because sometimes I'm like, is Pharaoh an oracle of some sorts? Because so honestly, it's sad to say, but like when you hear Desire, when you hear all the other stuff, you have elements of this. When I looked at the title and then I thought about our chat, I feel, and then I heard that fury from yourself. When I see someone say exorcism, and I looked it up as well just to make sure I wasn't right, like, you know, it's a complete removal of something unpleasant, right, from one's mind and memory. In a week where we've seen stuff happen in Washington, which is historic, we've seen Donald Trump on the verge of like collapse, really, do you think there is hope for a true exorcism of America's kind, or not just America's, but humanity's atrocities? Do you think that's possible?
Well, here's the thing. The pandemic, COVID, global, the atrocities that happened the other day at the Capitol, what's being put on Front Street in a magnifying glass and spotlight is this energy that is forcing us to at least take a look at ourselves. And again, the album is not just about government. It's a personal thing. It's like, what do I need to exercise? How do I grow? It is not natural and organic universally for us to stay stagnant. We're supposed to evolve. Things grow. You're supposed to gain more love, more intelligence, more hopefulness. And it just doesn't feel natural in this moment. If you close your eyes and you really focus and you listen, the proper energy isn't there. We can have things that take us away from that. I love sports. I love my figurines. I love so many things that could distract. But when you really take a look and examine ourselves, it doesn't feel like we should be where we are as a people, as humans globally. I thought as a child, even as a child, when you're talking 2020, 2021, that we would be like literally hovering on motor crafts and a more philosophical society right now. And this shit is archaic. It's just simply archaic that we can't even, you know, I know there's this, people have their narratives and nuance, but just on a common thread, it's hard to keep someone focused. You literally have to be an expert at being eloquent and putting things in context to not get hit with a barrage of different narratives. So, you know, when I speak about these things, and it's just impossible on socials, you have to make sure you're putting things in context, you know, even with the virus, over and over again, you have to bombard people with the mask is to protect them from you, the viruses transmitted through droplets. Even if there was no pandemic, like, would you want to sneeze on someone on the tube? Like, would you literally be like, you know, just cough on someone's face? We've always covered our mouths. But because things could get politicized, it starts to take on a different fervor. And I think all of our governments are not doing a just good enough job at being empathetic about having to explain over and over again, because the narrative starts to shift, you know. And this is why I think we're kind of feeling this moment, to go back to your question, that's kind of like forcing us to focus on these things that we didn't have to focus on before. So I may have went off there. I pride myself on hitting the mark on the question. To answer your question, you know, I do think there's hope for those who are open to elevate to a higher level of understanding and higher level of spirituality and vibration. For those in the darkness, and this is written throughout the history of time, I don't know if there's hope for them to be brought to a light. I think it's going to be easier for them to stay in their ignorance.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee. My name is Bobbito Garcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast. Real hip hop.
I'm just going to dive into obviously the record and the stuff that you've brought out already, but also like Fight. I wanted to talk about that. You touched on it a little bit. Just the lyrics on there, man. Like you said, talk about bar heavy, but I don't want to butcher the verses, but there's verses on that track that are just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Could on Fight, first few things, it sounds like you've used Hitler in the intro or some sort of screaming like European of some sort. So what was the case? What was the thinking behind something like that, which stuck out to me? And then obviously you want to talk about Cypress Hill getting involved as well.
The intro is Mussolini.
Right.
And fucking jackass fascist talk that he's spewing. I wanted to start the record off with the antithesis of what the record was about. But knowing that someone of that magnitude and how global my music is, a lot of my Italian fans were hitting me up like, why the fuck did you use, you know, Mussolini in the beginning of the song? And, I was explaining to them like, no, this is what the song is fighting against, like the energy of it. And so I wanted it to sound like it was rallying up people to get riled up. But of course, I don't want to use, you know, the jackass, because as an MC, as an artist, you just, you know, Trump is redundant. So I didn't want to put his fucking voice in the front of the song. Or I think even though you don't understand the language, maybe it still kind of like builds that energy up at the top of the song that we were looking for to say, fuck this, man. It's time for all of us to fight against this type of ideology and these ideas. And so that's the purpose of the sample at the top. And then Cypress, that's like a dream come true. You know, I was telling Be Real, I'm a big fan. I've been a big fan. And at this point in my career, I can reach out to almost any artist and at least say, hey, this is who I am. And I would like you to do a verse or get on a song. But I'm very selective. And there are not many songs on the album that lend itself to features. Because it's a rock-based, band-based record, and who does that, like, in that field? Like, I know hip-hop artists be like, I got 80 features on my shit, and it sort of becomes a compilation. But I wanted this to be like us. I just felt they were so perfect for the tones, again. Obviously, Cypress is rocked out, and I love them because of that. And even though it's samples, just like Simon says, it still comes across like, you know, a lot of the fervor of what they do. And then in terms of colors, his voice just brings about a color. And then Zendog's voice just brings about a color. So I was seeing like, at this point, who would be perfect in this spot on this radical ass song that's you know, against police brutality, yet again, injustice. And I thought those colors really matched right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very good way of putting it, that with colors, because that brings me on to we've talked again in the past, and you were saying you approach music like a director at times. Mm-hmm. And I was the imagery of that video is amazing, and the whole project generally, the imagery is amazing. Just as an overall on that, on the aesthetic of it, what fueled your creative drive to land on this?
I've told you in the past, I think like a filmmaker, so I had all these images. You know, when you're hearing a song, I think a lot of MCs, you know, they see the song, they see the stage, they see the crowd. You know, sometimes I was having a conversation with Jean Grey one time, and she was saying we both kind of work in reverse. Like you hear a beat and it takes you to a place where you're already like accepting a Grammy, and then you're working your way back through how to get to that point in your brain. Like, so with a lot of the songs, I'm like, I'm seeing the end point, but I'm also seeing how to get there in this new world. And so visuals is one of the things. So number two, that's the second thing what took us a long time. Like I wanted to make sure we had a lot of visuals. We got mad visuals dropping for a bunch of shit on the album, like live shit, more actual like video shit. We even got one video animated. It's like the illest animated video that I'm so proud of this shit.
Wicked.
For one of the like really rocked out left songs on the album. But that's what it's about, man. It's about being like, take chances and unapologetic with the shit. So I'm excited about this, kid named See-Through out of the UK. Like the people who did the logo work, Any 40, people who did the animation work, See-Through, all UK cats, like, you know, so big up.
Brilliant.
To England, because again, on an artistic level, I searched high and low for people who fit this project, and we seem to connect there as well. So a lot of people, shout out to everybody. Yeah.
Brilliant, man. Yeah. That's great. Because there's already little Easter eggs like the masks and just little things you can really dig into. And digging into, obviously, another one of the tracks, 666, three six-word stories.
Mm-hmm.
Before I dive in and ask you the questions, I know you sampled Hand of Doom on that. And
No. That's the band. Yeah, that's the band. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It sounds like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So again, what took this project so long is not only did we replay shit, but that song in particular, I went and researched what they use, what guitars, what bass, what board, you know what I mean?
Dave.
And we went in, and this was like 2.5-3 years ago. We recorded out of the studio in Williamsburg, had all the vintage equipment. And the engineer was excited that we were doing it too, because he, you know, and we researched and we came back the next day and we had a lot of the shit that they put their music through. We went to tape with the low frequency shit. And I just always liked the way that Black Sabbath shit kind of had this warmth on it. And so we played the shit over. Darul played live drums. And so even though we played it over, we sent it into them because it's an interpolation. And the biggest joy that I've got so far from this project is the writers and the people from their publishing was like, wait, you know, we hear the sample, you know. We were like, nah, bro, we played it over. There's no sample. I was like,
wow.
I wrote a letter to them explaining why the lyrics are so fucking crazy and insane, and I would never like disrespect their craft. And so man, they were like, yo, we love this shit. Come on, man. That's just fucking amazing. Yeah.
You've done it, man. That is a level. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to Master of this again, listening to this album has got me down these rabbit holes. Master of Reality is an amazing album. Mm-hmm. And just hearing what it did me as well. I genuinely thought it's props to all of you guys for absolutely nailing that.
Mm-hmm.
Again. That sound that you're bringing on that, it also makes me think, what does it mean? 666, three six-word stories. Could you break that down for us? What the meaning behind that?
So also, and it's mad layers to the project, the songs are super dense. It's 13 songs, but they'll last you a while because each song in itself is kind of like a story and a film in itself. So there'll probably be some people who could zip. But it's not the type of album, like the way things begin and end, you'll find it difficult to be like, okay, let me sample this. Okay, fast forward. Okay, let me sample this. Okay, because they're starting off in a certain way where it's like, I want to see where this intro goes. But that being said, the thought process was that I wanted to write 1 6-word story. And then I was like, how about you write 3 of them? And that's the ill title. And that's kind of like the vibe of what we're trying to exercise as well. As well as a lot of things that's happening in the outros of the songs feel like exorcisms. Like we're literally like, get off the bad energy, get off the bad energy on a lot of the outros and shit. So you kind of feel that with no videos at all. I think someone would be like, yo, they're literally trying to work the fucking energies and the spirits with this album and the things that they're doing. And that's one song where it's like, there's no chorus on 666, so where it rises back up to the ramped up part from the Black Sabbath record, you know, it's really like, rah! So like, you know, I wrote it in mind that we would be performing. I didn't know there would be a fucking lockdown all over the globe. So a lot of the songs was also written, I want people to have in mind, of seeing us rock these records live, which is what we were banking on, because Ja Rule and Marcus is so good. I was like, oh, the fans are going to love this shit when we get on stage, you know?
It's made for that, man. Just the energy, everything. One of my first thoughts was, this live would be amazing.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate, you know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig, that's how we play, and that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out ya.
Again, I'm guessing it definitely isn't a sample, but like Scarecrow, that is an insane like earworm. And It's so, I think of it now and it's making me rock. Like, it's crazy. But like, one, that riff is amazing. But what is it about the Wizard of Oz thing in there? Like, there's a definite nod to Wizard of Oz and Big Up. I think you're speaking Spanish, spitting some Spanish on there as well. So fair play. Just break that one down. Scarecrow for me. Like what were you thinking when you were doing that one?
When I first, I wrote the concept to that record years ago to other joints and shit. I actually wrote it without any music. So in my mind, I was like, I think I'm on that yellow brick road. I'm on that yellow brick. Hello, Rich. I'm on that yellow. I was like, this is just dope. I got to find, you know, I got to get with the band and fix it or get with a producer. Forget Dog's name. Out of Canada. He's down with Marco Polo. Amazing beats. And so, yeah, when we started working on that, I knew it was perfect. So I wanted to kind of like do a turn up joint, but rocked out, because early on, what I was finding out when I was doing shows and just watching shows and watching the kids with the really, really hot turn up records, it kind of had that fervor of like hair shit. So, you know, this fucking shit right here is the same thing as this right here. Tempo wise, if you don't double time it. So I was kind of like, oh, shit, like, people want to get this energy off. Like, people still want to get stadium energy off. And that's what those records made me feel like. I fucked with a lot of the Chief Keef shit. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of joints that gave off that energy early on when turn up shit started popping. And a lot of the Migos shit, when it started popping, like, I was like, that's disguised and it's mixed like a pop record, but I know what this energy is. So when I got to this project, I was like, I really want to grime, like, rock out a version of that shit with heavy, you know, heavy guitar riffs and a heavy riff. That beat is like the perfect fucking beat for that song. Like, I was in the studio with Talib and Common, and they was like, play it. This was like a year and a half ago. And they was like, play something off the project. And I played that shit, and they were like, like, Qual was like, I'm stuck right now. Like, this shit's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting, because I know you seem to have quite a collaborative mindset. We had Thought on the pod, and he went very excited, yourself and those other guys as well, in this collaborate. Like, just the way you guys seem to work. Was there any advice you got going into this project like that really helped from anyone in your peers or in your support network?
Yeah, and that's why Lee Stone is an exec. It's not just the sonics, but it's the advice and it's the attitude and anything that goes into really getting an artist to be in the right mind frame, or the encouragement to be as unapologetic as I am on this project and to really be like, fuck it. Because it doesn't really sound like what's happening right now. You know what I mean? Like, in a sense of that record, when you hear it, you know how to move to it, but it doesn't sound like what everybody else is doing with that tempo. In my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to have a strong backing system. And then my whole team, even my peers, like, you know, I told Pos from De La what I was doing. You know, I'm doing this with a band and it's going to be. And he was like, about time. Like, you've been headed that way for so long. Like, go ahead, we're waiting. Like, so all of those kind of like little things that he probably won't even remember is beautiful to me and really, you know, put the battery in my back.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. Beautiful to see as well. I mean, I can't wait to hear the full project when it lands in January. When's it dropping again?
The 22nd
of January. Brilliant. And quite a few things have happened, and it made me think of just yourself and what kind of artist you are as well. And actually, it reminds me, I just finished watching a film, The 40-Year-Old Version. I'm not sure if you've watched mm-hmm. that. Oh, have you watched that film? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know if anyone's watched this. It's on Netflix. Brilliant film. It's about appreciating mm-hmm. art, and especially black art, especially if you're not black. And what, you know, all those things, what it means to be an artist. But the whole idea of selling out is very integral to that story. And
right.
we've had this interview booked in, and every time I think of yourself, I think of stuff you've told me before, which is like, you're a boutique store, and when someone comes into the store, you are like, you know, appreciative of that.
Right.
I just had to ask you, man, has there been times in your career where you faced that, where you faced someone offering you a chance to what some would call sell out, other people would call, you know, getting your bag, getting what you need to get? Has there been positions you've been put in like that in the past?
Oh man, so many.
Oh no, really?
So many times. Yeah. So, you know, I would, from my standpoint, my perspective, I would think that that would be apparent, but it's not. So I'll say, yeah, there have been plenty of times, plenty of offers, plenty of different things where I've had to be like, Do you want to sell this, or do you want to sign with this, or do you want to be under this moniker? And what does that mean long term? More importantly, what does that mean happiness wise? So, you know, like,
yeah,
I attribute the decision making to coming up in hip hop in an era where it was important to be original, important to add something to the culture, important to know your lane as well. And in the end, if you kind of stay authentic, things come about where those people or corporations or whatever comes around and they're like, I really need something very authentic for this thing that I'm doing. Who should I reach out to? And this, it usually winds up being like a handful of people. So I wanted to stay the course because it would, you know, my emotions were fragile back then too. And it would have really pained me to be shelved or to be boxed in creatively in a way that I didn't want to be. So it was kind of like easy choices. Yeah.
I see, man. It's very easy for someone like me to say, because I'm listening to it. I'm not living your life, man. So I don't know what decisions mm-hmm. you're having to make. But mm-hmm. all I can say is I'm internally thankful that you've stayed the course, because even, again, we're speaking first week of Jan, there's been a lot going on. When I think of yourself and I think of someone who's for me is a GOAT, top five, let's think about, can we appreciate these people when they're here? And especially people who stay the course and have a morality to their stuff, which I respect. And on that tip, having someone like MF Doom pass away just a week ago, it made me start listening to Desire. I've been listening to Push. It's really helped. And it's made me think, man, I'm so glad that we have Farrah Monch. Like, I'm so glad you're here to talk to us. And with someone like Doom, I would just want to see where you were at, if you want to speak on it or not.
Yeah, I'm crushed, man. It's very heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking, and to get the news when we got the news and to find out the information about the news. I mean, he died on my birthday. Like, Halloween is my birthday, you know? So that just took me to a place, and I had to think about that, and I was stuck there. And then it was New Year's Eve, and then I was stuck there. And then, you know, I'm just such a big fan. Not a fan in a sense of the Doom fans who like have all of the pieces and vinyl, but a fan in that he found his voice in an iconic way off a second stage of a career, breaking through the barriers of the timeline that corporations give artists, black artists, in terms that they should have a career. And the point that permeated, this artistry that permeated was with me, was the freedom of it. And so when you see someone being free artistically, it just gives you so much hope. You could be going through whatever you're going through. And like you said, if you listen to a song like Push or Desire or one of these songs or a Doom song, you know, he may be doing his Doom stuff, but it's the flyness and the freeness of him unapologetically being Doom is what really resonates with the average, with anybody who's a fan in any walk of life, saying to themselves, I'm gonna go nail this skate trick today. I'm gonna go nail this bike trick today. And it hurts to lose people like that. I know the music lasts forever, but it's always a heartbreaking thing because so many of us don't achieve that level of zoning in and finding your voice that way. You know, to me, Sean Price was another one, you know, in a different way, who, even though the bars were hardcore, there was a level of comedy in there that let you know he reached a freedom with himself. And so, you know, it's just hard because we need those people. I'm glad that the music is there, like you said about my stuff. And it's the reckoning and something I had to look at in terms of mortality in general and be thankful that I've been given this platform to produce music. It's why I chose this career, because from Organized Confusion day one, because we were digging through records to find samples, it told me that James Brown, Ohio Players, whoever we were sampling from, this stuff was 70, 71, 72. And I was like, it's still resonating with me. And these songs will last forever. If you get into this game, think long term. Don't think about making a record for the summer, because the shit is going to exist after you're not here anymore. So I've always thought about my career that way as well.
Yeah, man, makes sense. Have you ever had, was it any like creative work done with Doom, or any even passing stuff happened with Doom in the past with yourself? I mean, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, no, we and unfortunately, that's another thing that hit me. I was like, oh, you know, I was like, I don't, we didn't work together. And that's kind of where I'm at right now as an artist. And so many artists deal with that in terms of so much more I readily want to do. And then I'm kind of like stuck in the pandemic shit, right? I'm in the basement right now. Can't move like I want to move per se. I love interacting with people, but we've interacted on numerous occasions. But this one time in Paris, we were both sitting at a table, me and him, and he was at the pinnacle of his success. And he was like, you know, I just stopped giving a fuck about shit. And, you know, shit comes to my head, boom, 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 and I spit it. And, you know, the formula, boom, boom, boom. And we kind of had like a technical conversation like that. And shit. So crazy.
But I would have paid to just hear that convo between you two. Did he have his mask on? Was Daniel Dubelay there, or was it Doom?
Nah, he was just chilling.
Chilling. Oh, he was, man, just wicked. Chilling. That's wicked, man. I've just realized, and I know this is odd, but I've got my Pharaoh print there, and right behind me here, I've got my Doom print, and it's like, this is all coming together right now.
Yeah, that shit's
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking of Doom, one of my favorite lines is about Paul C wearing Stetson hats. And I need to ask you, did Paul C wear Stetson hats?
Not that I remember.
I remember Doom saying that, and I was like, really?
Yeah.
But I mean, Paul C's another one where, I mean, I've done my small amount for his work, relatively small amount. Mm-hmm. God, yeah. I mean, Paul C for you must have been like quite instrumental right back in the day, right?
Yeah. And now that you mention him, now that this is like a therapy session.
Sorry, man.
When Paul C passed, it's kind of a similar feeling. And now that I'm thinking about the Doom passing, it probably took me, you know, bits to in that space for different reasons. But like Paul was just a kind of pure soul and really dope, obviously, at making beats. But the premise of why he wanted to do music was pretty fucking pure. And that always struck me as admirable and inspirational, like, you know, like love this shit, you know. So losing him again was just like another moment was like, I don't understand, you know, I don't understand why, you know.
Yes, yes, you're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
But Farah, again, with this, what I've heard, the small bits I've heard of this new project, I'm so looking forward for it to dropping, because I feel like it's going to be that. And I feel like I need to shake off that energy, like you said. Before you shoot off, though, man, I thought, look, we've had you on before. We've talked about your, like, there's so much we dive into. But I thought, you know, I just wanted to play a little game with you, if you're up for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
A little bit of word association, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just reel off a few tracks of yourself or Organized Confusion. And if you can think of just the first words that come to your mind when you hear some of these all-time classics, right? If you're down, I'm just going to list a few of these. Right. So first up, we've got Fudge Pudge.
You know, not to harp on it, but me and OC and Prince Paul wrote the majority of that song in my like bedroom where I had like a studio set up and SP set up, and it was very free. You know, if you listen to that record, it's no chorus. We're kind of like no arrangement. I don't know what the bar, you know, we performed it last year before COVID, and it was like, you know, we're redoing it. Matter of fact, Lord Finesse redid the song for us because we didn't have an instrumental of the original song. He like redid the whole record with the piano and all that shit. Whoa. What is this? Lord Finesse. Shout out Lord Finesse. So we're performing a song and it's like, Prince is like 22, I'm like 21 and a half, you know, it's that type of shit. And we're like, we're just old school vibe out in the park on a beat kind of thing. And just the freedom of, I remember I had a post of Snoopy in the corner, and it was from a MetLife ad, which was the genesis of OC being like, rappers get met because, man, it pays. It's like a life insurance thing. And it's just like that kind of freedom, that fun that's on the song is what I loved about that record.
That's brilliant.
Was I supposed to give a spiel or just say one word?
You were supposed to be, one word, but I'm actually here just
I'm sorry.
I think the fans and everyone, listeners, really just want the whole thing. So, but I'll reel them off. And if you have any tangents, please do go on them. Hell is what I wanted to hear.
Hell. Just again, man. Just bars and vibe and rock. Yeah.
Like that. Mm-hmm. Rapid eye movement.
Bars.
It is. That's exactly my go-to with that one. Stress.
Snow.
What? Because of the video?
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. That is great. Oh man, the light.
I would go to freedom again. Like I got that beat from Diamond D, and before I wrote anything, I started singing the chorus. You know, it's like just start singing the chorus. So just the freedom to be like, fuck it, let's go. That's what it's gonna be.
That must be so amazing to feel that. That's brilliant. Okay, just a few more here. What have we got here? Let me see. Oh man, Bad MF, Bad Motherfucker. I love that track.
What an amazing record, produced by Lee Stone. We knew we had a record with that, and which is why I went so visual heavy with this project, because we didn't have a lot of visuals for PTSD, and we didn't have a lot of visuals for the Stress album, if you want to go back that far. But with Bad MF, we were touring that album, and we were murdering crowds with that song. And they didn't even know the song yet, you know. I could tell some people had the new album and some people hadn't had it, but everybody was kind of like, what the fuck is this? And you know, again, another song that was written to perform live, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And the last one, because it is, we're in the middle of a pandemic with a virus, Hypnotical Gases. That is a track, man. That is a track.
I'm going to say Soothsayer. Soothsayer is the one word I'll use for that song.
Love it.
Soothsayer.
Oh, man, so good. Fair, man, I could play this with you all day, but I know we can't be doing that. But, man, thank you. Thank you so much, Fair, man. Really appreciate this.
Appreciate.
So before you go, man, just have to ask you what we always ask. What's the last great piece of music you heard, Fair, man? Could be old, could be new. Just the last thing you heard where you were like, that's amazing.
It's a bunch of stuff. I was watching the Lee Morgan documentary the other day, and Wayne Shorter is in a lot of that documentary. And it made me very nostalgic because my brother is the one who turned me on to a lot. My oldest brother, who passed away 2 years ago, is the one who turned me on to a lot of the rock shit that influenced me, a lot of the jazz shit, fusion shit, Weather Report being one of them. And Wayne Shorter was in the band at the time with Jaco Pastorius. All that shit kind of shaped me. So I'm watching Wayne Shorter as an old man now, you know, in the Lee Morgan. And they just was playing. It was a lot of live shit. And I was just like, incredible. So a lot of the music in that documentary is the last thing I listened to, which is really dope. And, you know.
I've got to dive in.
Yeah.
I've got to dive in. Wicked, man. Well, thank you very much, man. Stay safe. Look forward to the music. And big up, man. Just keep doing it. Keep smashing the Pharaoh, man.
Thank you. Appreciate you so much, man. I appreciate these interviews. They're some of the best. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Until the next time, man. Until the next time. Good luck with the launch.
Thank you.
Thank you, bro.
All right.
Peace.
All right.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man, and I'm rocking with the Crate 808 podcast with my man Cam. Yeah.
Well, 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 Pharaoh Monch, 13, new music. We got some metal in there. We talked about Black Sabbath. I talked to Pharaoh Monch about Black Sabbath. Amazing. So yeah, man, go check that project out. It is dope. I've had a little sneak peek and man, yeah, there's some earworms on there and Pharaoh's doing Pharaoh and there are bars. But yeah, man, go check that out. It's available everywhere. And big up Pharaoh again for coming on. That's our hat trick, man. We've had the legend on 3 times. Go check out crate808.com to check out the other episodes. He did one in the middle of 2020 when it was all very crazy. I mean, it's still very crazy. And yeah, man, he smashed it. And the first time we had him on, man, it was just, yeah, superb. What a legend. So yeah, just leave with a bit of housework for you guys. Get involved in the Crate 808 mailbag. Basically, we'd like to hit us up either on the socials, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or hit us up on email, crate808@gmail.com. Get into the mailbag, get involved. We've had some great correspondence. We want to know about your weirdest dreams about rappers, right? We want to know, have you ever met a rapper? If you've met a rapper, where's the weirdest place you met a rapper? And who? And what was the conversation like? And other things we want to hear is, we had like the worst merch you've ever bought. I want to know also what's the best merch you've ever bought, just because I like merch. So yeah, there you go. Yes, go check us out. And just leave me to say, man, rest in peace, by the way, to my big bro, Mons. Unfortunately, tragically died through COVID. But man, I just had to say, big up. This boy was just basically backing me every day. He would like basically holler Crate 808 every time I was in a room, which made me feel a little bit weird, but also like, what a legend. And also, this boy is a joker because we were doing some Hindu prayer ceremonies for him to see him off. And during these, clearly, I'm not that religious a person, but clearly my big bro has decided to take it upon himself to interject Biggie's One More Chance, right? So we're all doing these Hindu prayers and, you know, it's very solemn and, you know, we're seeing him off. And then bang, I just hear Playboy Bunnies, those wanting money. That was it. And then it went back to the prayer. And clearly there'd been a glitch, but why was it played his favorite song, One More Chance? So that's like the weirdest thing that's happened to me in such a long time. So RIP Mons, man, my big bro. And it, actually, for the mailbag, what is the weirdest things that have happened to you involving hip hop like that? So yeah, anyway, man, big yourselves up. Thank you for tuning in. Keep it locked. We've got more coming. And yeah, big up Pharaoh Monch. Boom. Peace. Catch you on the flip side.